shoehorned you into a particular mode of development. In contrast, we're taking a toolkit approach. A framework is just a place to hang your hat. It's a skeleton program, and you add your code into there. By contrast, a toolkit is a collection of functions and useful classes for you to use as you see fit. So with a toolkit approach, it allows you to be very flexible, a lot of freedom, and there is no one right way to do things. There is the expressive ability there to use a toolkit however you want. And you know, we do make strong recommendations about how it should be used, but they're not enforced. You know, we don't say this is how you should do it, we just recommend this is a nicer way to do it. So you've probably heard about all the different framework patterns like Reactor, Active Object. I won't go through all of them here, but a particular one that I like is the Proactor pattern. And the Proactor pattern is an improvement on the Reactor pattern for building very fast, scalable applications. So one of my colleagues was very much into this these component systems. And these design patterns and meta classes and meta programming, general software architecture things. And every day we would go to lunch and be together discussing, and this is what he would tell me, just all day long telling me about design patterns and what he was working on right now. I always thought that the Proactor pattern had to be made using a framework. But then after I was playing with STD bind and STD function, which are new functions which have come from Boost in the new C++ standard, and after playing around with Boost Azure, it was a revelation to me that we don't need a framework for the Proactor pattern. Everything can use function objects which have the arguments bound and are passed around throughout the program. The other thing is that we want to build a component ecosystem. A component means that you break a program, instead of one monolithic blob, you break it down into many separate and smaller pieces. And what that means is that because there are smaller pieces, you can swap them in and out, and if you want to do something testing, you can take it out, and then you can experiment with a new piece. So there's a quote from Architecture of Open Source Applications, of BerkeleyDB, which says, "It is vital for any complex software packages testing and maintenance, the software be designed and built as a cooperating set of modules with well-defined API boundaries. These boundaries can and should shift as needs dictate, but they always need to be there. The existence of those boundaries prevents the software from becoming an unmaintainable pile of spaghetti." The Satoshi Bitcoin code is a big splotch. New features are tacked onto the site. So if I want to add something new, you end up disrupting the entire system as opposed to your small part. There's another quote from the same book. It says, "Software architecture does not age gracefully. Software architecture degrades in direct proportion to the number of changes made to the software. Bug fixes corrode the layering and new features stress design. Deciding when the software architecture has degraded sufficiently that you should redesign or rewrite a module is a hard decision. On the one hand, as the architecture degrades, maintenance and development become more difficult, and at the end of that path is a legacy piece of software maintainable only by having an army of brute force testers for every release, because nobody understands how the software works inside." So LibBitcoin is made of components. If you look in this example, like let's say I look, these MySQL and SQLite are different types of database software. If I didn't want to use MySQL serialized, I can swap it out and put an SQLite serializer to save my data as a way of testing things quickly. So this is some code. So as an example, we create a network component, and this is This is the component that handles the network interfaces with the Bitcoin network. And here we call the Handshake Connect, which does the exchanging of the versions and so on. As a principle, whenever you have some piece of functionality in libbitcoin that encapsulates a bunch of other lower level features, they're free-floating functions. So this Handshake Connect actually does a bunch of other random a bunch of calls on this network object. And then the callback goes to this function, handle handshake, and argument 1 is passed, argument 2 is passed, and the network component is bound to the argument. And then when it actually escapes into this function, the top is passed. But okay, you have this error code which you can check to see whether everything was okay. And then here, we subscribe to inventory packets coming from the Bitcoin network, and this is our callback to receive them. And then here, we actually send a get blocks message. We want to start downloading the blockchain. So the whole of that previous program here is written in Python. So we also have Python bindings written. So that's how we handle this scalability problem. So one of the other things we've worked on, we've made. So if you're developing a piece of graphic software or 3D modeling program or video editing software, you should be actively using that piece of software so that you can see what the problems are, you can see what the challenges are, and that's the only way you can gain insight into how to improve the program. We made of useful utilities using libbitcoin, which is called Subvertex, and so the first tool is the Pollard. What that can do is download the Bitcoin blockchain into an SQL database. So what that means is, let's say, for example, if you added an SQL web front end, then boom, you have an instant block explorer type website. Or Priv, which is a tool for working with private keys. You know, you can sign, verify, find the address, create new private Bitcoin key pairs, balance to find the balance of a Bitcoin address. Okay, so one of the earliest scandals with Bitcoin, one of the early big things was one guy who lost $500,000 worth of Bitcoins. And this was big enough to reach CNBC and a bunch of other news sites. Now, I have a friend and he's really passionate about Bitcoin, but he's not a technical guy. And every so often he talks with me and he says to me that, you know, I don't feel secure on my computer. Like, one day I'm just using my computer and then boom, my Bitcoin wallet is gone. You know, he would feel far more secure with an actually holding his Bitcoins. It's not the same as like some of us who are familiar with cryptography and security practices. So what if there was some way that you could have your wallet on a device, and then you can send and you can create transactions from that device and send them to the Bitcoin network, and it doesn't matter what, but as long as nobody got access to the device you hold, this transaction, so let's say on this device you create a transaction, and you save it to a USB stick, or you save it to a CD, or you send it over the network to another computer, which broadcasts into the Bitcoin network. It doesn't matter how virus-ridden or malware-ridden that computer is, but nobody could ever steal your Bitcoins. So, banks have all these problems. They have, you know, accounts are shut down, money is lost, they're inefficient. I like Bitcoin because I am in control of my own wealth. Even with all these problems, though, with banks, people still trust the banks more than they trust themselves. Well, now here is a way that people can secure their own Bitcoins without having to trust themselves. That loss of $500,000 worth of Bitcoins need never have happened. And it's a concept called an offline wallet. This was something that was proposed few days ago, but we already, I just looked and I saw, oh wow, we already have the tools already written in order to make a direct line transaction, I just didn't realize yet. And so for Bitcoin and Subvertex, we have Ubuntu and Gentoo packages. So going back to the beginning, I said about maybe I didn't say, but one of the things with Bitcoin is that Bitcoin, in order to be successful, you know, does need to diversify. Diversification is healthy. In the wild, when you have a population of animals, if that animal has the same genetic pool, then one disease that exploits some problem in their genetic can suddenly destroy the entire population. Likewise, with Bitcoin, by having many different versions of Bitcoin and many different exchanges, if there is a problem found in the network, it won't affect Bitcoin. So we need to, having a diverse memetic pool is a healthy, good thing. And I'm very happy to say that that is happening. There are many different Bitcoin implementations in the works. And but one of the things is that the way Bitcoin does work is they speak a common language. It's called the protocol. And in order for the network to function, to have a healthy state, they all need to speak the same language. This is how the internet works. You know, all the web servers, Microsoft web servers, Linux web servers, speak the same language. And there needs to be a standardization process in Bitcoin. And this is something that, this isn't like from Bitcoin consultants. This is me as an individual. And that's a very important thing, that you can't have an organization corrupting the process. And the Bitcoin improvement proposals. And yeah, so what it is it's a way for people to write specifications for the Bitcoin network, and then they're approved and copy edited and put in some storage, which everybody from all of the implementations follow once it's agreed upon. Yeah, there is a process that we have on the mailing lists and person-to-person IRC, especially since the implementers group is quite small. And actually there's four proposals so far. One of them is M of N standard transactions, which is a pretty cool feature actually, which is the ability to have a wallet which is owned by many people. So you can't spend the funds unless you have the mutual consent of a bunch of people. And that's actually a very exciting feature that I think Bitcoin has needed for a long time. You know, if you're an admin on a server running a service, it's a bit risky to have your wallet owned by one person who can suddenly run away with all your Bitcoins tomorrow. So imagine now you've got, you know, two people or eight people who own that wallet. And to send them funds, you need the consent of all eight people. There's OP Eval, and the new address format for OP Eval, Operation Eval, which is, you know, a way to make the M of N standard transactions a possibility. And user agent strings, so we can gather useful statistics about the Bitcoin network through a message included in the protocol. So that wraps up our cross-implementation coordination. And this wraps up our project list. We have covered the projects of Bitcoin Consultancy. And I'm around the conference for questions. Oh, and there's another thing too, which is Vivanco, and it's Esperanto for your bank. The source code is free. So there's been a bunch of scandals and problems with trust with these online wallet services. So this is a wallet service which has no fees and is free for the community. So anyone can set up their own competing wallet service or look for security flaws. So I hope that together we can move into the future to grow Bitcoin by developing cool pieces of technology. The thing to understand is that you're not going to make big money with Bitcoin right now, but if you use Bitcoin in such a way that you do all the cool things that you enjoy, that you think are interesting, you won't have to worry about those things in the future. So for now, let's focus on the cool things.
Thanks very much, Amir. Don't go away.
So the next tool we're going to have is I was talking about many different Bitcoin implementations, and they're probably like, together with decentralizing exchanges, having a diverse set of Bitcoin implementations is also very critical and very important. And one of the guys who is working on another Bitcoin implementation called Multibit is here, and he's going to do a talk with us. His name's Jim Burton.
So, if we go through this step by step, you've got your browser. We start in the top left. You've got your browser, Chrome, Safari, Firefox, whatever. It talks via HTTP back to the server. So we've got the multi-bit merchant. From the HTTP point of view, it just looks like any web server. When multi-bit merchant wants to talk to the, what I call the Bitcoin network, that's the Satoshi clients, that's the backbone, the Bitcoin D programs. It uses Bitcoin J, which is basically Mike Hearn has written this. It's the Java implementation to talk to the Bitcoin network, to the Satoshi clients. So multi-bit merchant will use Bitcoin J when it needs to hear about notifications, things like that. When multi-bit merchant wants to talk back to the browser, it will use, obviously it'll give HTML responses, but also we open up a WebSocket, an HTML5 WebSocket. So when we want to basically push alerts, when we get a notification from the Bitcoin network, gets into the server, we push it back onto the onto the browser. So that's multi-bit merchant. Also down here, you've got multi-bit. Now multi-bit, you can use it, if you're a general user, you can use it for your sending and receiving bitcoins. There's also an extra feature that we've added to do with multi-bit merchant, which is, right, we've touched on this a few times this morning. It's like, where do you put the private keys? The private keys are the gold. Where do you keep them? Now, we didn't want to put them on the server in multi-bit merchant. There's been too many hacks and security leaks and media trust. So what we do, we have an advantage compared to some of the other solutions mentioned here today, which is multi-bit merchant, it only has to listen for payments. It doesn't have to sign and make payments. So that is a simplification that we can use. What we do is, in multi-bit, you have an little option, which I'll show you in the demo later. You basically click a button and it creates 1,000 private keys. It puts them in your wallet, so you're the merchant, it puts them in your merchant wallet, local on your machine. Then you export the addresses. That just gets put into a flat file. At the moment, you manually import it into multi-bit merchant. So multi-bit merchant has, we call it an address bucket. So when it needs, when a customer comes along and it wants to buy, customer wants to buy something, it goes to the address bucket, takes out the next one, goes, oh, here you go, this is yours now. We'll give you this unique address, which I don't have the private key for. That's going to be your, you can imagine there's a one-to-one link between customer and that address. So we're hoping that this gets around a lot of the trust issues, and by not having the private keys on the server, well, there's less to steal. You can interfere with the multi-bit merchant's process flow, but you can't get the private keys. The private keys are on the client, on the merchant's laptop, locked away in his business office. Right, that's the architecture bit. Demo time. I think this is the only demo that we're going to have this morning, so let's give it a go. With coders though, I know you want to see demos. Yeah, I really enjoyed it when I saw it in there's code, the Python coming up, that's what we want. Right, this is the latest. The screen resolution is slightly different, so just bear with me. This is the latest version. It's basically what's on the website to download with about another week or two's coding. This is the Your Wallet screen. So with multi-bit, you can have multiple wallets open. Wallets are flat files on the data on your file system. So we just open multiple wallets and monitor all the addresses in all of the wallets simultaneously. So here I've got two wallets open. I've got my merchant wallet on the left-hand side, with a pitifully small amount of bitcoins in. That's going to be that's the person who owns the web store that I'm going to show you in a minute. You've also got the customer wallet. This is this one here. He is going to be spending, well, me, are going to be spending some money later on. So you can see here the transactions, your transactions appear. I really like the ecosystem actually, because you look at the other solutions like the John Smith Web 0.4 solution that's just come out. He has a single balance column with the amount negative in red. And I looked at that this week and thought, oh, that's good, I'm going to copy that. So everybody is going to be upgrading everything as an ecosystem should. Right, okay, so if we look at the merchant one, you've got two options at the top: receive Bitcoin, send Bitcoin. This is the merchant receive suite. So if you were a general user, you would use this panel here. Let me show you the receive addresses down here. You know, I mentioned the address bucket. I've obviously set this up earlier, and down here we've got a whole load of addresses. We've got thousands. These are the address buckets. These are the addresses that the multi-bit merchant are going to pick out and use for our customer finding. So how do you generate those? There's a create bulk addresses. This is very, very simple at the moment. You basically click the button, it adds 1,000 private keys into your wallet and outputs it into a CSV file. At the moment, you manually copy it to multiple merchants and it gets picked up. No doubt, when it's fully productized, there'll be a nice upload button that we've set up. It's pre-out for the whole multiple merchant. Right, so that's from the merchant's point of view, loading up hundreds, thousands of addresses. But what if you just want one? So, well, you may, just like in the Satoshi client, you do create new, Eurobit, please pay me, and I would like you all to
use my from.
Thanks for the feedback, shows I'm not looking at one time, but, and I'd like you all to pay me 10 milliliters, please. So, that's all very conventional on the left-hand side, but on the right-hand side, you can see that it's generated this funny little hybrid of a QR code and text. What you've got here is, we call these Bitcoin swatches. A swatch, if you're not native English, is when you go shopping for fabrics, you get a whole load of example fabrics. Those little pieces of fabric are called swatches, so we've co-opted that word. What these are, on the left-hand side, it's the Bitcoin URI, which is your address, the label, the amount, encoded, and then as a QR code. And then the right-hand side, it's just text decoration to make it human readable. The idea here is the QR codes, they're great for the computers, but you can't read them. So what we do is we put it's the same information. Eurobit, please pay me 10 million. And the address down here in readable but pretty small font. Now these are generated as an image. So you can copy the swatch, then you've got an image in your paste buffer, you can put it in an email, you can drag and drop it, you can print it out, you can use your mobile phone apps, Bitcoin mobile phone apps. They all use Bitcoin URIs, so you can get your phone out, zap it. So you can, if you want, use Multibit as a primitive point of sale system. But if you want to write a proper point of sale system, you get the code and you get hacking. So that was the merchants. Oh, we just got money this way. I always like to see money. That's the merchants receive screen. Let's go to the customer. So I think that Bitcoin that I just received there, I've been testing it, so I think that's just something I need to send. Right, customer send Bitcoin. Obviously in a real example, you wouldn't have the merchant and the customer co-located, that's just an artifact for the demo. Customer, you've got an address to send to, your label, you can see I've been fiddling around this morning, and an amount. Again, you just type in whatever you want here. And the swatch automatically gets updated as well. if you want to copy that, they can send it to somebody else. You copy it, you swap the wallet, you pay with another wallet. You want your dad to pay it if you're a student. It's probably typical. Send it off to them and things like that. They're quite. The whole idea of the swatches is to kind of popularise it. Everybody knows images. Everybody is comfortable with swiping on their mobile phone an image. It's just to make it a bit less techy. Right. This is the send screen, so you've got a send button. At the bottom, you've got all your previous send addresses. The idea of having the send addresses and the receive addresses integrated rather than having an address book is it's just less clicks. If you didn't like that and you wanted to change that, by all means, take the code, it's a panel, put it in another one, put an action on there, and you can do what you like. Right, that was send. The next one, that's all I really wanted to cover about Multibit for now. I wanted to show you next our Multibit merchant. We've mocked up for you today. It's a book site. It's your generic Amazon book site. So what have we got? We've got Cryptonomicon, A Year in Provence, Plumbing and Central Heating. Anybody? The Quantum Thief. Now that's an excellent book. I just read that about a week or two ago. Definitely read that. If you're a Bitcoiner, definitely read it. It's got public and private keys as a form of money. It's brilliant. Just read it and download it. When you get down by nobody listening to Bitcoin, read the next chapter, another chapter of that, and you're like, excellent, we're on the right track. Right, so I'm going to buy let's chat about some money. I've got 10 Bitcoin to spend. This is real Bitcoin, this is the test Bitcoin. I'm going to buy Cryptonomicon at a basket. So I get a basket. Now you can see here, this is all very conventional. This is deliberately not threatening. For the customers, they just want to go to a website, choose the books, or whatever else it is they're selling, and buy it. And you confirm order. Oh, sorry, I didn't log in. We support OpenID. I've gone off script then. So I'll just log in with my Google ID. So that's two things happening there. Logged on with my Google OpenID. The logging in is basically about order fulfillment and tracking of purchases. If you make a payment and you buy a book, you want to log in next week, check that it's delivered or it's on hold or whatever. We did wonder about doing it fully anonymous, and it's slightly too difficult by not having a session, by not having a persistent user ID. You lose out on quite a lot, so we've put in OpenID support. Gary?
You can do it completely anonymously, you just have to have a UUID code.
Okay, right. Yeah. This is Gary Rowe. I was going to point him out on the credit screen, but stand up, show your face. Multibit Merchant is his baby. I've done Multibit, and Gary's done Multibit Merchant, so good call there. Right, this is our, just to go back to what we were doing. We were happy to buy Cryptonomicon. We put it in our basket, we press confirm order, and now we've got a payment for it. For the user experience people out there, the UI designers, why would we put in another payment page? Why would we do that? Admit.
What?
Oh, I thought you were saying 5 minutes. Okay, right, I'll talk more quickly. What we've got here is there's several things going on. In the fully productized version, this will be just from a secure server. So your JavaScript, your HTML, your CSS just comes from one point. That's so you've got a smaller attack surface. At the top, at the bottom here, you've got your code word and the code image. What these are shared secrets. When you create an account, you choose your favourite image and you put in the code word. By repeating them here, you know that this has come from the server that you expect. Shared secrets. And at the bottom, handily out of view, that's just you are going to buy this book. At the bottom, you've got your swatch. So, I mentioned the address book before. The address that's down here, 1PED, is the next one in the address bucket. 3.25 bitcoins, Bitcoin box. So to buy it, with my 5 minutes left, I drag it over to here, to Multidev. It gets written over here, it just gets embedded and I'm drawn to get. But more importantly, the QR code gets read and the address, the label, the amount gets put in here, all pre-populated. We don't want people copying and pasting Bitcoin addresses. So let's buy it. Confirmation screen, address, Bitcoin books, 3.25, give them a mini fee, let's give it a go. Send, Bitcoin sent, okay. So, what I've done there is Multibit gone to the Bitcoin network via Bitcoin J, sent it out. What I should get is, yeah, an alert here. This is a little drop down. Payment received for 1 PED. This will be in the release version, obviously this will be a nice pretty panel, thank you very much. But what that shows is that is from the Bitcoin network into your server, out through your WebSocket, into your client. So the user gets validation on the screen. And what about the merchant? They should have some money, let's check it out. Right here, so that bottom one, I don't know who sent me that, but great, fine, thank you very much for the money. And the next one up is this one here. It's 26th of November, 12:35, received with 1 PED, 325. Right, so that's the full cycle. Customer pays, merchant receives. In the final product, we'll have all the fulfillment use cases. So, a pick goes to the day warehouse, pick, and off they go. But you get the idea. Right, so that's the demo. I'm probably down to 0 minutes now, so let's just quickly go through this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Architecture demo. More details. Swatches, yeah, we've done those. Drag and drop. Multibit merchant. No private keys on the server. Easy to deploy. I won't go into details, but we've done a few things to make it easy. Moving strictly on, multibit.org, credits. Obviously, this is, I haven't done all this. These are the credits. Lots of people, Gary that I pointed out, Mike Hearn has done all of Bitcoin J, which is my backend. Lots of people. Thank you very much, everybody.
There's going to be a half an hour lunch, but he has a question, so let's take it.
Oh, sorry, questions, yeah.
I just didn't find your code on the website.
I was just wondering where the code was.